The Vian was taking Jill, Danyan, her scribe, several servants, and then Cullen, as the captain of an honour guard of 25 men, 15 for her, 10 for Rodri, as their ranks allowed. As she sourly remarked, Rhys could feed part of her household for a while, after letting her vassals feed off her for so long.
"I am rather surprised you're taking Jill," Nevin remarked. "She's unused to large courts and their ways."
"Well, she really does have to start getting used to them. Besides, having her there will keep Rodri calm." Nevin was about to make some remark about trouble with Cullen if Jill were blatantly displayed as Rodri's mistress, but he stopped himself, simply because the captain seemed to have no objections to his daughter's position. Ruefully, Nevin had to admit that he was disappointed. He'd been hoping that her fear of her father's wrath would keep Jill away from Rodri and free for the Dwayoma. The night before they left for Abawin, Nevin decided to seek Cullen out and found him in his chamber in the barracks. Dressed in a new shirt blazoned with red lions, Cullen sat on the side of his bed and polished his sword by lantern light. He greeted Nevin hospitably and offered him the only chair.
"I just wanted a few words with you about a somewhat delicate matter."
"I'll wager you mean Jill."
"Just that. I'll admit to being surprised that you'd let her do what she's doing."
Cullen sighted down the sword blade, found some near-invisible fleck of rust, and began working on it with a rag.
"I think you'd be the least surprised of any man," Cullen said at last. "You're the one who knows why I had to let her go."
When he looked up, straight into Nevin's eyes, Nevin had to admire him for the first time in 400 years. All the arrogance that Geraint had flaunted, life after life, was gone, leaving only a certain proud humility that came from feeling the bitter realities of his life.
"There's more kinds of honour than battle glory," Nevin said. "You deserve yours."
With a shrug, Cullen tossed the sword onto the bed.
"Jill's going to do cursed well out of this, isn't she? She'll have a better life than any that I thought I could ever give her. Even if I had a lord's ransom for her dowry, what kind of husband could I have found her? A craftsman of some kind, a tavern owner maybe, and there she'd be, working hard all her life. For a silver dagger's bastard, she's risen pretty high."
"So she has, truly. I'd never thought of things quite in that way."
"Doubtless you've never had to. What's that old saying? It's better for a woman to keep her poverty than lose her virtue. I'd have slit Jill's throat rather than let her turn into a whore, but when you ride the long road you learn not to be too fussy about fine shades of virtue. Ye gods, I sold my own honour 1,000 times over. Who am I to look down my nose at her?"
"Well, true spoken, but most men wouldn't be so reasonable about their only daughter."
Cullen shrugged and picked up the sword again to run calloused fingertips down the gutter of the blade.
"I'll tell you summat. I haven't told a soul this tale in 19 years. But have you ever wondered why I ended up with the God-scorned silver dagger?"
"Often. I was afraid to ask."
"As well you might have been."
Cullen gave him a thin smile.
"I was a rider in the Guerbret of Caermore's warband. There was a lass I fancied there, waiting on table in the great hall. Sir Rian, Jill's mother. And another lad fancied her too. We fought over her like dogs over a bone, until she made it clear enough that she favoured me. So this other lad, may the gods blast me, but I've forgotten the poor bastard's name. Anyway, he wouldn't take her at her word, and kept hanging around her. So one night I said summat to him about it, and he drew on me. So I drew, and killed him."
Cullen's voice dropped, and he looked down at the sword across his knees.
"Right there, in the Guerbret's barracks. His grace was all for hanging me, but the captain stepped in saying the other lad drew first. So his grace kicked me out instead, and my poor Serian insisted on riding with me when I went."
Cullen looked up again.
"So you see, I swore then that I'd never kill another man over a woman. It doesn't do you or her one cursed bit of good."
Nevin was speechless for a moment, simply because Cullen had no idea of just how much of his weird he was laying aside with that simple truth.
"You learn," Cullen said. "I was a stubborn young dog, but you learn."
Truly, I was as stubborn myself when I was that young.
No doubt. You know, Herbman, why we rub each other so raw? We're too much alike.
Ye gods, so we are.
At that time, Abawin was the biggest city in Eldith, with over 70,000 people living in its warren of curving streets and closely packed houses. Unwalled, it spread along the Ava Gwyn up from the harbour, where the Gwerbret's fleet of war galleys shared piers with merchantmen from Deveri and Bardek both. Right in the middle of town stood the enormous Dun of the Gwerbret, a towering symbol of justice. Inside, the 30-foot stone wall spread a ward covering some 30 acres, cluttered with the usual huts, barracks and sheds. In the middle rose a Broch complex, a round central tower of 6 stories, 3 secondary towers of 3. But the most amazing thing of all was that the Broch stood in the middle of a garden. Lawns, beds of roses, a fountain, all set off from the ward by a low brick wall. Everywhere writhed the open-jawed dragon of Abawin, carved onto the outer gates, displayed on the blue and silver banners hanging from the Brochs, sculpted in marble in the centre of the fountain, carved again on the doors into the Broch, inlaid in blue slate on the floor of the great hall, blazoned on the shirts of every rider and servant, embroidered into the bed-hangings and cushions of the luxurious chamber that Jill was going to share with Danyan. On the mantel over their hearth, there was even a small silver statuette of the dragon. Jill picked it up and studied it.
"It's lovely, isn't it?" Danyan said. "The Maelwiths have always collected fine silver." "It is. It must have been quite a wrench for you to leave all this splendour when Her Grace retired to Canabane."
"It was. I'll admit to being just the least bit glad when Levian's brother got himself killed. Terrible of me, but there you are."
Danyan dismissed the subject with a little shrug.
"Now, Jill, you'll have to be very careful while we're here." "Oh, I'm sure of that, Dan. I'm terrified."
"Now, people will make some allowances, but follow what I do. Stick as close to me as possible, and please, don't say horse dung and such like. You're not in the barracks any more."
"Now, let's have a bit of a wash and then get you out of those nasty brigger and into a proper dress."
Since Jill had never ridden side-saddle in her life and an untrained woman was in real danger, she'd been allowed to wear her old clothes on the ride to Abawin. She was surprised at how good they felt and how much she hated to take them off again. Once she was dressed to Danyan's satisfaction, Danya took her to the women's hall to present her to the Gwerbret's wife. Danila was a lovely woman, with fine dark eyes, a wealth of chestnut hair, and a figure as slender as a lass's. She seated them graciously, and had a servant bring wine in real glass goblets, but she was distracted as she and Danyan chatted, and all the time she twisted and untwisted a silk handkerchief between her fingers. Jill was glad when they left.
"Dan," Jill said as soon as they were back in the privacy of their chamber. "Is Her Grace ill or such like?" "She is not. Rhys is about to put her aside for being barren. My heart truly aches for her."
"And what will happen to her?"
"Our lady is going to make her a marriage with a widowed cousin of hers. He has heirs already, so he'll be glad of a beautiful new wife. If it weren't for that, she'd have to go back shamed to her brother. I doubt me if he'd receive her well."
Jill felt honestly sick. She had never realized before just how dependent on their men noble-born women were. There was no chance for them to work a farm with the help of their sons, or to marry their dead husband's apprentice and keep his shop, much less open a shop of their own. Suddenly, she wondered what was going to become of her. Would she someday be reduced to cringing and fawning around Hrodri to make sure she still had his favor?
"Danila will ride back with us when we leave," Danyan went on. "We'll all have to be very kind to her. The worst thing of all is that she has to be there when Rhys publicly denounces her."
"Oh, by the black ass of the Lord of Hell, is His Grace as hard-hearted as that? Jill, lamb, do watch your tongue. But it's not Rhys, it's the laws. Rhys would spare her the shame if he could, truly he would, but he can't."
When they went down to the great hall for dinner, Jill was relieved to find that they wouldn't be eating at Rhys's table. Where an ordinary dun only had one honour table, Abawin's hall had 6, one for the Gwerbret and his family, the others for guests and the noble-born officials of his court. Jill and Danyan sat with the seneschal,
the equerry, the bard, and their wives. From where she was seated, Jill could just see Rodri, seated at his brother's left. Although they had the same colouring and a certain shared look to their jaw that they'd inherited from Lovian, they were so different that Jill found it hard to believe they were brothers. Doubtless it was Rodri's elven blood that made his face so chiselled and delicate that, in comparison, Rhys looked coarse. Yet the Gwerbrit was still a good-looking man in his way, not the fiend that Jill had been picturing. The meal was elaborate, with a course of pickled vegetables arranged in patterns on little plates, a course of lark pies, and one of fruit preceding the roast pork. Jill paid strict attention to her manners, and spoke to no one, until at last the bard's wife, a round-faced little blonde named Kama, turned to her with cool, appraising eyes.
"This must be your first time at court," Kama said. "It is, truly. It's rather splendid." "Indeed. Was your father one of our country lords?"
Jill was utterly taken aback. Danyan leaned over with a limpid smile for Kama that seemed to be masking the word bitch.
"Jill is a very important member of Tyron Lovian's retinue."
Danyan allowed herself a glance at Rodri.
"Very important." "I see."
Kama gave Jill a warm smile.
"Well, you must allow me to entertain you in my chambers sometime." "My thanks. I shall have to see how much leisure my duties to Her Grace allow."
Danyan gave Jill a small nod of approval. Jill picked at her food and decided that she was no longer hungry. Although she thought of herself as a falcon, she felt as if she were dining with eagles, who might turn on her at any moment. She found herself watching Rodri, who was eating fast and silently. Finally he rose, looked her way with a toss of his head, and strode out of the hall. Flustered, Jill turned to Danyan.
"You can follow in a little bit," Danyan whispered.
Jill dutifully sipped her wine and made small talk for some minutes, then excused herself and hurried away from table. She found a page who knew where Rodri was quartered and followed him up the spiral staircase and through the confused corridors of the joined brochs for what seemed an embarrassingly long way before he pointed out Rodri's door with a sly and knowing smile. Jill hurried in and frankly slammed the door behind her. The tiny chamber was sparsely furnished with what looked like cast-offs from grander chambers elsewhere. Its one window looked directly down on the kitchen hut, and the smell of grease hung in the air. His boots and belt already off, Rodri was lounging on the lumpy bed.
"Did Rhys say anything about the rebellion?"
"Naught. Not one cursed word. We'll have the formal discussion tomorrow morn," says he. "The piss-proud little bastard, as if I was a criminal, hauled up before him for stealing horses." "I don't want to talk about it, my love. I want to get you into this bed and keep you here until you beg for mercy."
"Indeed?"
Jill began to untie her kirtle.
"Then you'll have a long night of it."
It was just at dawn that Nevin finally received concrete news of the Dark Dwayoma master.
Down in Caermore lived a woman named Nesta. Although her neighbours thought of her only as the somewhat eccentric widow of a rich merchant, she had studied the Dwayoma for over 40 years, and other things as well. Her husband's long years of trading in Bardic spices had given her a great deal of information about other, less savoury kinds of trade with that far-off land. When she contacted him that morning, her round little face was troubled under her neat black headscarf.
"Now, I can't be sure as sure," Nesta thought to him, "but I think me the man you're looking for has just taken ship for Bardic."
"Indeed," Nevin thought back. "I trust you haven't put yourself in danger by trying to scry him out."
"Oh, I followed your orders and kept well away from him. Here, see what you think of this tale. Yestermorn the wild folk came to me, quite troubled they were, too, about some dark thing that was scaring them. It made me think that your enemy might be in Caermore, and so I did a bit of scrying and picked up some odd traces in the etheric. I drew back then, as you told me to do."
She paused, and her image pursed wrinkled lips.
"But you know that I know half the people in Caermore, and my connections with the guilds give me ways of finding things out without using the body of light. I asked around here and there about peculiar strangers in town, and finally I talked with one of the young lads at the customs house. He'd seen a strange old fellow boarding one of the last Bardic merchantmen in harbour, and here, that ship suspected of being involved in the poison trade.
Nevin whistled under his breath. Nesta's image gave him a grim little smile.
And the ship sailed with the tide not 2 hours ago, she went on, and now the wild folk are as calm as you please, and there's not a trace of anything to be found on the Etheric.
Then if it wasn't him, it was another of his foul kind, but I'll wager it was my enemy. He'd know I couldn't follow him to Bardic with the winter coming on.
He was very lucky to get a ship himself. It was like the boat was waiting for him, wasn't it now?
It was indeed. I'll wager you tracked our rat to his hole, sure enough. My humble thanks, Nesta, and my thanks to that sharp-eyed custom officer, too.
Oh, he's a good lad, she chuckled briefly. He apprenticed with my man and me, and I taught him how to use his two eyes.
After Nesta said farewell, Nevin spent some time pacing in his chamber and considering this news. Since neither he nor anyone else had picked up any traces of Dark Dwayoma, he was quite sure that Nesta had spotted the enemy. It made him curse aloud because with a winter's head start, the enemy would be impossible to find in Bardic, a land of many small states and constant political turmoil that made local authorities very lax on matters of civil law. Since not even the greatest Dwayoma master in the world could scry or send a projection over a large body of water, Nevin would even have to wait until spring to send letters to those who studied the true Dwayoma in Bardic and warn them of this enemy's coming. As much as it ached his heart, he was going to have to let the enemy escape. For now, he told himself. Just for now. Then he put the matter aside forcibly and went to distract himself by dressing for the Guerbret's inquiry into the rebellion. The formal hearing was held in the Guerbret's Chamber of Justice, an enormous half-round of a room on the second floor of the main broch. In the exact middle of the curve were two windows with the dragon banner of Abu Wynn hanging between them. Under it was a long table, where Rhys sat in the centre with the golden ceremonial sword of Aberwyn in front of him. To either side of him sat priests of Bel, his counsellors in the laws. A scribe had a little table to the right, and the various witnesses stood to the left, Hrodri himself, his various allies, and Levian, who as a mark of respect had a chair. The rest of the room was crowded with the merely curious, including Nevin, who stood by the door and watched sourly as the proceedings dragged on. One at a time, Rodri's allies knelt in front of the table and answered Rhys's questions about every detail of the war, day by day, until Nevin wondered if the wretched thing would take longer to discuss than it did to fight. Over and over again, the allies testified that Hrodri had comported himself mercifully and abided by every law of honour. Yet Rhys sent for Cullen, too, and questioned him while Hrodri turned dangerously sullen, and Sligan's face blossomed red with rage. Finally, Rhys summoned Hrodri one last time.
"There's only one small point left, Lord Hrodri. How do you expect me to believe all this talk of Dwayoma?"
Nevin sighed. He should have expected that.
"Because it's true, Your Grace," Hrodri said, "as all my witnesses have attested."
"Indeed. It makes me wonder if you're all spinning a wild tale to cover a worse one."
When Sligan, his face scarlet, lunged forward, Peridir grabbed his arm and pulled him back. Levian rose from her chair and stalked over to the table.
"If I may have leave to speak, Your Grace, will you sit there and say that your own mother is lying to you?"
"Of course not, but you may have been lied to."
Sligan made a noise as if he were choking, and Eddar muttered something under his breath.
"I take it then, Your Grace," Levian said, "that the reports of Dwayoma are the whole point of this malover."
"They are. I want the truth."
"Then you shall have it."
Levian turned, her eyes searching the crowd.
"Nevin, will you assist me in this matter?"
Nevin hesitated, wondering if displaying the Dwayoma before a crowd were contrary to his vows. Then it occurred to him that perhaps it was time for more men to know that the Dwayoma existed. After all, one reason that the Dark Dwayoma could thrive was that most educated people laughed at the very idea of Dwayoma. He worked his way through the crowd and made the Guerbret a bow, but he stayed standing.
Your Grace, I understand your scepticism in the face of such peculiar events, but I assure you that men such as me have all the strange powers of which Lord Rodri has spoken.
The crowd gasped and eased forward. Rhys leaned back insolently in his chair.
Indeed. And do you expect me to believe that on your word alone?
Nevin raised his hands and called upon the wild folk of Ayr and Aethir in his mind, where he gave them his commands. Suddenly, a blast of wind stormed through the chamber and set the banner flapping and the parchments of priests and scribes flying through the air. Thunder boomed, and bolts of blue fire crackled and gleamed like miniature lightning. Nevin himself glowed with an intense golden light. Screaming, shoving each other, the crowd of onlookers fled the chamber. Rhys leapt to his feet with an oath, his face dead white, and the priests clung together like frightened women as the wind raged around them with strange, half-heard laughter rippling in it. Nevin raised his arm slowly and snapped his fingers. The wind, fire and light all vanished.
Not on my word alone, Your Grace. No.
Sliggin was laughing so hard that he nearly choked, but Peridir dug his elbow into the lord's ribs and made him hold his tongue. Rhys looked this way and that, his mouth working as he tried to speak. Rodri got to his feet and bowed to him.
Does my brother still disbelieve me?
Rhys turned to Rodri's allies and made them the bow.
My lords, you have my sincere and humble apologies for ever doubting one word you spoke. I beg you to find it in your hearts to forgive me for slighting your honour, because I was ignorant and had never seen the things you have seen.
Sliggin growled, but Peridir got in before him.
No need to grovel, Your Grace. We all had a hard time believing it ourselves at first.
My humble thanks, my lord.
Rhys picked up the ceremonial sword without so much as glancing Frodri's way, and tapped the pommel three times on the table.
The malover is closed. The Gwerbret has spoken.
Since he had no desire to be mobbed by the curious, Nevin lingered just long enough to grab Rodri's arm and haul him away. They hurried out to the gardens, where the leafless aspen shivered in a cold wind, and the marble dragon in the fountain seemed to shiver under the fall of water.
My thanks, Nevin. I've never treasured any sight more than the sight of Rhys's pig face when the fires went crackling round him. Do you want Corbin's domain? I'll get Mother to bestow it upon you.
Spare yourself the effort, though I appreciate the thought. I think I'm going to have to hide in my chamber for the rest of this miserable visit.
Then come with me. I'm going to leave tomorrow with Jill and some of the men. Curse it if I'll sit around here and let Rhys insult me. You saw him turn and speak to Peridir, not me.
I did, and you've got every right to be furious. But please, lad, try to contain yourself. You're right. By all means, let's leave on the morrow, and early.
At the crack of dawn. I can't stand it for one more night.
Rodri spoke so calmly, and his plan of leaving was so sensible, that Nevin never felt the trouble coming. Later, of course, he would curse himself for a fool. In Levian's enormous suite, the noble lords who'd fought with Rodri were having a conference of sorts. For all that Peridir tried to calm them, they were furious at the insult. Sliggin, in particular, limped round and swore that if he weren't such a law-abiding man, he'd lead another rebellion then and there. Rodri perched on the windowsill and rather wished that he would. Finally, when Danyon and Jill came to serve the men ale, Sliggin stopped his puffing and sank wearily into a chair.
"My lord?"
Jill offered Sliggin a tankard.
"My thanks."
Sliggin took one from the tray.
"I'm glad you weren't there to listen to His Grace's little farce, Jill. Would have ached your heart, eh?"
"That's an odd thing," Levian broke in. "I wonder why he didn't have Jill summoned. He certainly had everyone else up before him. I wouldn't have been surprised if he'd hauled in the carters and spearmen."
"I admit I wondered about that, Your Grace," Jill said, "but I'm glad he didn't."
"No one likes being called a liar to your face, eh?"
Sliggin paused for a soothing gulp of ale.
"Cursed good thing old Nevin was there."
Jill came over to Rodri and offered him the tray. When he took one, she smiled at him in a way that soothed him considerably. The lords went on with their wrangling.
"We're leaving for home on the morrow," Rodri said softly. "Nevin's going to come with us too. I've had all I can stand of my cursed brother for now.
So have I, truly.
What do you mean by that?
Not. The way he treats you aches my heart, that's all.
With his free hand, Rodri caught her arm so hard that she nearly dropped the tray.
What has Rhys been saying to you?
I just happened to meet him in the corridor, that's all.
Tell me the truth.
Well, he bowed and said I was beautiful, just a courtly sort of compliment.
All at once, Rodri realized that every person in the room had turned their way. He let Jill go and stood up to face his mother's level gaze.
Rodri, Levian said wearily, your brother was doubtless speaking to Jill only to annoy you. He's so torn to pieces about his wife that he's not going to prowl round some other woman.
You'd best speak the truth, mother.
I do. I swear it to you.
Then I believe you.
Much later, when it was time to go down to the Great Hall for dinner, Rodri had a chance for a private word with Levian. She agreed wholeheartedly that he should leave on the morrow.
The rest of the settlement lies between me and Rhys anyway. You only have one more meal at his table, so please, Frodo, watch what you say tonight.
I will, Mother. I promise.
When he took his place at Rhys's left, Rodri did his best to keep that promise by attending strictly to his food and speaking only when spoken to. Rhys never said one word to him, since he was discussing the land settlements with Levian. Finally, when the mead was served, Rodri got up and bowed to his brother.
If His Grace will excuse me.
By all means. Rhys paused, smiling.
By the way, brother, you've found yourself quite a little mistress, haven't you? She seems to be as skilled with a sword as she is in other matters.
Through a red berserker's haze, Rodri heard Levian gasp.
I'd rather His Grace left Jill out of this, Rodri said.
Indeed?
Rhys rose to face him.
You seem to have kept her quite in the middle of it. How does it feel to have a lass fight your battles for you?
Rodri's sword was half out of its scabbard before he realized what he was doing. The screams of the women brought him to his senses, and he froze, his hands still on the hilt, the blade still exposed, about 16 inches of cold steel that was going to hang him. Rhys stepped back, and he was smiling in the fierce joy of victory.
So, you'd draw on a Gwerbret in his own hall, would you?
Rodri had the brief thought of killing him, but Levian threw herself in between them. The entire great hall was silent, staring. When Rodri sheathed his sword, the slap of metal into leather seemed to ring to the ceiling.
Rhys, Levian hissed, you provoked that.
It's no affair of yours, mother.
Rhys caught her arm and shoved her aside.
Call your women to you and leave the hall. Go.
Her head held high, Levian turned away just as the shouting broke out on the rider's side of the hall. Rodri dodged Rhys and ran for his warband, who were rushing to meet him. Cursing and shoving, Rhys's men were on their feet and trying to surround the Clu Coq men, but there were only two men between Rodri and Cullen. The way the silver dagger looked at those two made them back off, and Rodri was through to the solid comfort of his 25 loyal riders. Cullen gave him a grim smile.
Do we make a fight of it, my lord?
All round them the 200 of Rhys's warband went dead silent, hands on sword hilts, as they waited for Rodri's answer. Rodri glanced around and saw that his men were ready, that they were willing to die there with him in one last hopeless fight. All he had to do was say the word, and Rhys's great hall would run with blood. He could die clean, not hang like a horse thief. He wanted it so badly that it was like a fever, burning him, troubling his mind, as slowly his hand drifted to his sword hilt. But some of that blood would belong to Jill's beloved father, and to men who had no graver fault than the ill luck to be serving the Clu Coq. He wrenched his hand away.
We don't. Stand aside and let them take me. Cullen, serve my mother faithfully, will you? I will, my lord, and I'll see you again.
The meaning hung there as clear as a noose. Again, before they drag you out and hang you. Rodri had one last thought of drawing and fighting, but he forced himself to stand still as his men drew back, and the Gwerbret's men grabbed him by the arms, hauled him forward, and disarmed him. Nevin was eating in the privacy of his chamber when Cullen burst in to give him the news. Cullen spoke briefly, quietly, his eyes so bland that Nevin feared he would murder Rhys if all else failed. As he followed the captain back to Levian's suite, Nevin was remembering Gwerin the bard, who so long ago had played a similar trick himself.
"I tried to warn him," Nevin thought. "I told him that it would come round on him some day."
Only then did Cullen's news come real to him, that the man who carried Eldith's weird in his hands was going to hang on the morrow morn. Levian's reception chamber was packed with angry lords, cursing Rhys and his provocations. Levian herself half reclined in a chair, with Jill and Danyon hovering behind her. When Nevin came in, Levian looked his way with hopeless, tear-filled eyes. Jill ran to her father and buried her face in his chest.
"If Rhys hangs Rodri," Sligan announced, "he'll have a rebellion on his hands that will make the Delondariel run red. I heard what he said to the lad. We all did, eh?"
"Just so," Peridea said. "We'd best get the men and ride out tonight before he traps us here."
"Hold your tongues," Nevin snapped. "Until we have just cause, let us not discuss rebellion, my lords. I intend to speak to the Gwerbret myself, and I'm going to do it now."
They cheered him as if he were the captain and they the warband. When Nevin left, Cullen came along with him.
"I've ridden outside the laws for so long that I don't remember them much. But doesn't a lord's captain have the right to beg for his lord's life?"
"He does."
Nevin was surprised that he hadn't remembered that himself, but then he realized that he'd been assuming that Cullen would have been unwilling to do any such thing.
"Here, would you truly go down on your knees for Rodri?"
"I would, and I will if you let me come with you."
Cullen was looking at him in a weary grief. Only then did Nevin realize that Cullen loved Rodri as much as Geraint had loved Blaine before Bronwyn came in between them. He realized another thing, too, that he respected this hard-bitten silver dagger who was willing to humble himself for those he loved. As palpably as if he'd thrown down a heavy-laden sack, Nevin felt the chains of Weird break and set him free. Cullen would never be Geraint to him again, but merely himself, not even a man he'd forgiven for a fault, but a friend. For a moment, he wept. Cullen laid a well-meaning, if misunderstanding, hand on his shoulder.
"I feel like weeping over it too, but we can pull him out of this rope if ever two men can."
And together, truly together like a pair of blood-sworn warriors, Nevin and Cullen went straight to Rhys's private chambers. When Nevin pounded on the door, a page opened it with the news that his grace was receiving no visitors.
"Then tell him that no one is here, or I'll send a Dwayoma storm in ahead of me."
With a yelp, the page found the door wide and dodged back out of their way. Rhys was seated in a heavy carved chair, with the Lady Danila crouched on a footstool at his side. He rose to meet his uninvited guests, hooked his thumbs in his belt, and tossed his head back. Nevin had to admire him for refusing to be intimidated by the best swordsman in all the Verry, and a man who could burn his brock to the ground with a snap of his fingers.
"I suppose you've come to beg for Rodri's life."
"We have, Your Grace," Nevin said, "and both of us will go down on our knees if we have to."
Rhys considered them for a moment, then smiled, a cold twitch of his mouth.
"I have no intention of hanging my own brother. I just wanted to make sure that the young cub knows his place. All he has to do is beg my forgiveness in open Malover, and that's an end to it."
Nevin let out his breath in a long sigh of relief.
"Here, both of you," Rhys went on.
"Did you truly think I'd break my mother's heart and see half of Western Eldith go into rebellion by hanging him?"
When they hesitated, Rhys smiled again.
"You did, didn't you?"
"Well, Your Grace," Nevin said, "you've made your feelings about your kin quite clear in the past."
"Ah, by the gods!"
All at once Rhys exploded, talking so fast that it was hard to understand him.
"And why shouldn't I hate him? All my life, all I've ever heard is Rodri this and Rodri that. Rodri's the one with the honour. What a cursed shame that Rodri wasn't born first so he could have the ran. Rodri, Rodri, Rodri!"
Rhys's face was a dangerous shade of scarlet.
"To hear them talk, you'd think I'd cheated the little turd out of his inheritance, when all the time it was rightfully mine."
With a fluid grace, Danila rose and caught her husband's arm.
"My lord distresses himself,"
So I do. Rhys paused to force himself under control. My apologies, good sorcerer, and to you, Captain. Rest assured that your lord's life is safe from me. Your grace, meaning no insult and all, Cullen said, but do I have your sworn word on that? You do, Rhys said graciously. No doubt you need it to reassure your men. I do, and my thanks, your grace, from the bottom of my heart.
Yet Cullen looked so bored and bland that Nevin wondered just what the captain was up to. Since all matters of criminal justice in Aberwyn were under Rhys's jurisdiction, out in his ward stood a proper jail, a long stone building with a common room for local drunks and beggars, and a few tiny cells for more important prisoners. It was some comfort, Rodri supposed, that he qualified for one of those, even though it was only about 6 feet square and reeked of urine and garbage. Under the tiny barred window was a heap of somewhat cleaner straw. Rodri sat down there, wrapped his arms around his knees, and laid his head on them too.
He was shaking. He could not stop shaking, and it was from fear, not rage.
He could face dying easily. But the shame of it ate at him, that he would be strung up in Rhys's ward like a common horse thief, where every man could watch and mock him. All his honour, all his hard-won glory in the recent war, all the respect of the men who were once his vassals, gone, stripped away from him by one thoughtless act. No bard would ever sing about Rodri Maelwyth without reminding his audience that here was a lord who died on the end of a rope. As a hanged man, he would even lack a proper grave among his ancestors. Without his honour, he was nothing, worth less than a bondman, not even a man at all. He bent all his will to the task, but he could not stop shaking. And what of Jill? At the thought of losing her this way, he wept, sobbing like a frightened child in the dark, until he realised that his tears were shaming him all the more. He unwrapped himself from his cramped position, wiped his face on his sleeve, then curled up again and went on shaking. Rodri had no idea of how long he'd sat there before he heard Cullen's voice at the window, a soft, "My lord?" Hurriedly he stood up and peered out.
"Here. Over here."
With a furtive look round, Cullen sidled up to the wall.
"I thank the gods I found you. I've been whispering at every one of these cursed windows. The guards won't let me in to talk with you. No doubt they're afraid you'll murder them. I was tempted, my lord. Here, Rhys has no intentions of hanging you. Nevin and I went to plead for your life, and he said ever so sweetly that he'd never break your mother's heart that way. He staged all this to humiliate you and naught more. All you have to do is beg his pardon in the Malover, and he'll forgive you."
Rodri grabbed the window bars so hard that his hands hurt.
"Don't do anything stupid," Cullen snapped. "Give the bastard what he wants and we'll be on our way home."
Clinging to the bars, Rodri rocked back and forth, throwing his weight against them as if he would pull them out.
"Rodri, talk to me."
Rodri went on rocking, shaking, tossing his head back and forth. He wanted to answer Cullen, but he seemed to have forgotten how to speak. He heard other voices, then guards, yelling insults and orders. When he could at last make himself stand still, Cullen was gone. Rodri sat down, but this time he sprawled out and leaned against the wall. Rhys's little trick had broken something in him, he realized, made him see a part of himself that he'd never wanted to see, but that now he would never forget. It would haunt him his whole life. The night he trembled like a terrified child instead of facing his death like a man. All at once he fell asleep where he sprawled. All night he dreamt about Jill. The guards woke him early and tossed him half a loaf of stale bread that he threw back in their faces. For over an hour he paced back and forth, barely thinking at all. At last the guards returned. They bound his hands behind his back with a leather thong and marched him out of the cell.
"Can't I have some clean clothes? I stink from that straw." "His Grace said to bring you along straight away."
Of course, Rodri thought to himself, of course. It was part of the humiliation that he would have to kneel filthy and stinking at Rhys's feet.
As they crossed the great hall, men looked his way with a pity that hurt worse than scorn. Up and round the staircase, through the last door, and there was Rhys,
sitting on the far side of the Chamber of Justice, with the priests beside him and scribes in attendance. The crowd of onlookers moved aside to let the guards through. When they reached the table, one of the guards kicked Rodri in the back of the knee and forced him to kneel. Rhys looked at him with a stranger's eyes.
"We have before us a grave charge. This man drew cold steel upon a Gwerbret in his own hall."
"That offence is punishable by hanging," said a priest.
The proceedings stopped to let a scribe scratch out the words. When Rodri glanced around, he saw Jill standing off to one side, her arms folded across her chest. That she would see him humiliated this way was the last bitter thing he could bear. The scribe stopped writing.
"Very well," Rhys went on, "but I'm minded to show you mercy. I'll admit, brother, that I said hot and insulting words to you, admit it publicly and freely. Yet the offence is a grave one."
The priest rose and began quoting from the laws.
"No man may draw upon the Gwerbret. Why? Because the Gwerbret is the very flesh of the law itself, and there must be no bloodshed in his hall. Why? Because no lord would sit in justice if he thought the condemned would revenge himself with steel."
The priest sat down again.
"So, some redress must I have," Rhys said. "If you kneel there and beg my pardon, pardon is what you'll have."
With a wrench of his body, Rodri got to his feet.
"I won't. I'd rather hang."
Gasps, murmurs from the crowd. Rodri even heard Jill yell at him to kneel, but he stared straight at Rhys.
"I'll give you another chance. Kneel and beg."
"I won't."
"One last chance. Kneel and beg."
"I won't."
Rhys's mouth twitched in a smile of bloodlust. Rodri refused to break. This time, by every god, he'd face his hanging like a man and redeem himself.
"You leave me no choice but to hang you."
Cullen stepped out of the crowd and flung himself down to kneel before the Gwerbret.
"Your Grace, last night you gave me your sworn word that my lord's life was safe from you."
Rhys caught his breath with a little explosive puff. Cullen's face was so impassive that anyone who knew him could see that he'd realized what was bound to happen and had laid up a weapon against it. Rhys knew it too, judging from the way he swung his head to look at Cullen with a remote, impersonal hatred.
"So I did. And no Maelwith ever breaks his sworn word. Well and good, Captain. I hereby commute your lord's sentence of hanging to exile."
He turned back to Rodri.
"Henceforth, you will be banished from all my lands, from the lands of all men loyal to me, and you will be stripped of all rank and position, all lands and properties, except for one horse, one dagger, 2 pieces of silver, and clothes such as any man wears. Never use the name of Maelwith again, for the head of your clan has cast you out of it."
While the guards cut Rodri's hands free, the Chamber of Justice was utterly silent. Then Levian sobbed in a gasping gulp of mourning that broke the silence like Dwayoma. The onlookers began whispering, then talking in a rising tide of noise that brought Rhys to his feet to yell them into silence. Once he had the silence, he turned back to Rodri.
"And do you have anything to say about your sentence?"
"I do. You've finally gotten what you wanted all along, haven't you? You'll have all the taxes from the Tyrannrin when Mother dies. I hope you spend every cursed copper well, brother. May you choke on the food you buy with it."
Rhys's face turned scarlet. If it weren't for the table between them, he would have lunged forward, but Rodri threw back his head and laughed.
"Some day the bards will sing about this. The miser Gwerbret, who was so hungry for silver that he ruined his own brother's life."
The priests leapt up, grabbed Rhys by the arms and hauled him back.
"Well and good then," Rhys snarled. "You have till sunset to get off my lands. You'd best ride east cursed fast."
Cullen left the sobbing Levian to her womenfolk and ran after Rodri as the guards marched him away. He caught up with them down by the gates of the dun, just as the guards slammed Rodri back against the stone wall and snarled at him to stay where he was while they fetched his horse. His berserker fit gone, Rodri turned to Cullen with numb eyes.
"My thanks. And my apologies, Captain.
but cursed if I'd kneel. I wouldn't have either, my lord. Never call me my lord again. Well and good then, Rodri.
Rodri gave him a faint smile. Cullen wondered if Rodri were going to break and weep. He wouldn't have held it to his shame if he did.
Now listen, lad. About 10 miles this side of Aber North is a village and a tavern called the Grey Goat. Ride there, tell the owner you know me, and hole up for a while. I'll send one of the lads to you with blankets and such like, and some more coin if I can get it.
If Rhys finds out, he'll kill you for it.
He won't find out. I've bested him once already, haven't I now?
Rodri tried to smile, a ghost of his old good humour that was painful to see.
Try to think, lad. We don't have much time. What are you going to do? Ride to one of Rhys's rivals and beg for shelter?
I'd rather starve.
So I thought. Then I'll give you my silver dagger. If anyone asks you why you have my device, just tell them I pledged you to the band.
Rodri stared at him, tried to speak, then shook his head in a no, back and forth, over and over, wider and wider swings, as if he were desperately trying to deny everything that was happening to him. Cullen grabbed him by the shoulders and shook him to make him stop.
If you won't take a rival's shelter, what choice do you have? Or are you going to do what I was too proud to do, beg for work in a tavern or stables?
I couldn't do that either, but...
Ah, by the hells! Don't you think I know how hard it is to take the cursed dagger? Don't you think I wept when I saw that it was all that was left to me, to sell my sword and have decent men spit when I walked into a room? But it's a way for a man to fight and gain a little glory while he survives, and you'll survive like I did. You're the first man I've ever met who's my match with a sword.
Do you really think I'm your match?
I do. Now, do you want this dagger or not?
Rodri hesitated, then grinned and tossed his head with some of his old spirit kindling in his eyes.
I do, and I'll wear it as proudly as I can.
Good. We'll all be here working for your recall. Remember that when the long road turns harsh.
Since Jill's first duty lay with Levian, she helped Danyan get their lady up to her chambers, then worked her way free of the crowd of cursing lords. By the time she got down to the ward, there was no one by the gates but the pair of guards. When she approached them, they looked at her with a certain pity.
Has Rodri already ridden out?
He has. You best get back to your people, my lady, and forget him as best you can.
As Jill walked back through the gardens, she stopped at the dragon fountain. She watched the endless rise and fall of the water, and wondered what was so wrong with her that she couldn't weep, even though Rodri had ridden out without giving her one last kiss. There, Cullen found her, but even when he pulled her into his arms, her eyes stayed stubbornly dry.
He refused to wait because he didn't want you to see him shamed, but he begged me to tell you that he'll love you forever.
He's not shamed in my eyes, and he never will be.
Together they went back to the broch. In the great hall, servants and noble-born officials alike gossiped furiously. The men of Rhys's warband stood round and cursed Rodri for daring to draw on their lord. Yet in all the bluster there was a doubtful undertone, a wondering, hastily denied the moment it appeared, if maybe, just maybe, Rodri had been right when he claimed that Rhys was greedy for the coin that the Tirinrin would bring him. In time, Jill realized that little doubt would grow, until men all over Eldith accepted it as the solemn truth. Thinking that, she smiled. Rodri had won a victory that Rhys would never be able to forget. The reception chamber of Levian's suite was empty. Jill could hear Nevin and Danyan talking with Levian in the bedchamber. Rodri's noble allies, Cullen told her, were packing up in a fury and planning on leaving court as fast they could. Somewhat to Jill's surprise, Cullen stayed with her. While she slouched in a chair, he paced back and forth, stopping often to listen at the door that led to the corridor. Finally, he smiled and opened it. His arms full of gear, Amir slipped in like a thief.
I got it all, even his sword. You were right enough about silver making men see reason. I got his lordship's clothes and such like from the servants for only a few coppers, but it took all the coin Lord Sliggan gave me to bribe those stinking guards for the sword.
I figured that, Cullen said.
Do we ride today, Captain?
It depends on Her Grace.
Cullen shot an anxious glance at the closed door to the bedchamber.
If we do stay, I don't want brawling and such like tonight at table. Remember that.
Then, Captain, we'd best eat in the barracks.
Amir dumped Rodri's gear on a table, then hurried off before a servant wandered in and found him there. Cullen picked up Rodri's sword and drew it half out of the scabbard so that Jill could see the double device, the dragon of Aberwyn and the lion of his adopted clan, both engraved on the blade.
May the gods blast me if I let Rhys hang it up in his chamber of justice as a mark of Rodri's shame. The thing is, how are we going to smuggle it out?
Easily, da. I'll wear it out.
What?
If I put on my old clothes, and Dan trims my hair short, and I ride with the warband with a sword and an old scabbard, who's going to notice?
Cullen laughed, his soft mutter of a chuckle.
No one, and I don't mean the herbman either. Well and good, my sweet. You're my daughter, sure enough.
Eventually, Nevin came out with the news that Levian was too exhausted to ride that day. When Cullen pointed out that it would be best to get Rodri's warband away from Rhys's men, Nevin immediately agreed.
And I've got to get out of here myself. Soon enough, everyone will remember that little show I put on in the Malover. I'll have a word with Danyon, and you get the men ready to ride before we have a brawl on our hands.
I will. And Jill, change your clothes.
Since everyone in the dun had known Jill only as Rodri's beautiful mistress, no one noticed the scruffy young silver dagger who rode out with the Clucock men. As they clattered along the north running road out of Aberwyn, Jill turned in the saddle for a last glimpse of the silver and blue dragon pennant flying high over the broch.
And may I never see Rhys's ugly face again!
Once more, Amir said, when he has to stand there in full Malover and announce Lord Rodri's recall.
It was a beautiful full day, as warm as summer, with a bluish haze hanging over the distant fields of ripe gold wheat. As they rode north, the River Gwyn sparkled as white as its name as it ran fast beside the road. Jill felt like singing. She wondered what was wrong with her that she'd feel nothing but joy. Then she realized what she should have known all along, from that first horrible moment when Rodri got to his feet in the Chamber of Justice. The door to her cage was standing open, if she had the courage to fly. As soon as he was outside the city, Rodri kicked his horse to a canter for the first couple of miles, then let it slow to a brisk walk. As they headed east, he kept up a walk-trot pace, making all the speed he could while the horse was fresh. By law, an exile was under the Gwerbret's special protection until he left the Ran, but that law had been broken more than once. Some of Rhys's men were likely to decide to curry favour from their lord by following and murdering the man who'd mocked him in his very chamber of justice. Every now and then, Rodri turned in the saddle to look back. The only weapon he had was his half-elven eyesight, which could pick out from a long distance away the telltale plume of dust that his pursuers would raise on the road. The road between Aberwyn and Abernorth ran straight while the seacoast curved in and out, sometimes close to the road, sometimes a good mile away. As he jogged along, Rodri kept an eye out for places to hide if he had to, but mostly he saw small farms, whose owners would doubtless refuse shelter to a man pursued by the Gwerbret's riders. Here and there, though, were stands of woodland. If he hid in one of them, his murderers would have to dismount to find him, and he'd have a chance to kill one with his dagger before the others cut him to shreds. At times he considered merely stopping and letting Rhys's men catch him, or perhaps turning his horse loose and walking into the sea to drown. His shame rode with him, like a rider behind him, clutching at him with heavy arms. Occasionally he would glance at his brigger, old, shabby and plain blue, spare clothes from Rhys's warband, as was his cloak. As a final humiliation, they'd stripped him of his plaid right there in the ward. Death seemed better than dragging out a miserable life in exile, a life that would end in a few years in some lord's petty feud or in a cheap tavern brawl. The only thing that kept him riding was knowing that Rhys would gloat over his death. Toward noon, as the road climbed a small rise, Rodri looked back and saw a small cloud of dust, far behind, moving too fast to be hiding some ordinary traveller. He kicked his horse and galloped down the rise, then turned into a lane running north between wheat fields. puzzled farmers shouted as he raced past, turning down lanes and jogging across meadows without any goal in mind. Whenever he looked back, he saw the plume of dust behind him. He was laying an easy trace. His own horse raised dust, and the farmers were no doubt telling the Guerbrett's men exactly what they'd seen ride by. Alternately trotting and galloping, he kept riding until at last he saw a woodland bigger than a mere stand of firewood. He kicked a last burst of speed out of his tiring horse and galloped hard for the cover. When he reached the edge, he could see that this forest was old, thick with shrub and bracken among the enormous oaks. He swung down and led his sweating horse through the underbrush. They'd gone about a mile when he heard distant yelling behind him. He found a little dell, coaxed the frightened horse down and into tall shrubs, then left it and slipped through the trees. He moved as silently as a deer, thankful for the first time for his elven blood. After some minutes, he heard men calling out behind him and froze between two low-growing trees.
"Must be his horse."
"Leave it for now. He can't have gone far."
The voices were vaguely familiar, his brother's men, sure enough. He could hear them crashing through the underbrush and fanning out, at least four of them, judging from the jingle of scabbards and spurs. Suddenly, Rodri was sick to his heart of running like a hunted hare. He decided that it would be better to let them find him quick and get his dying over with. He started to step forward from cover and tripped. Or something tripped him. He was sure of it, because the fall came so suddenly. As he went down, he felt hands grab him, a myriad of tiny hands that lowered him to the ground without a sound. He was too frightened to shout or even think as a rain of leaves and twigs pattered over him. The men were coming closer, clumsy and loud in the forest. As Rodri lay stone still, he heard another set of noises far past and to the right of where he was, noises that sounded exactly like a man running through the underbrush. With shouts and hunting calls, the Guerbrett's men took off after them. A little hand patted Rodri's cheek, and it seemed that he heard a giggle, a bare whisper of sound. He could hear the false hunt driving forward, turning this way and that, the noises fading slowly as the men were led in circles, back and forth, but always farther away. At last the sound died away. 100 little hands plucked and picked the leaves off him. Then one grabbed his hand and pulled.
"You want me to get up?"
The pull came again. Rodri got to his feet and looked round. Here and there a branch bobbed, or a cluster of leaves shivered in the perfectly windless air.
"You must be the wild folk. Well, by every god you have my heartfelt thanks."
Suddenly they were gone. He could somehow feel that he was alone. As he made his careful, silent way back to his horse, it occurred to him to wonder if Nevin had sent this unexpected help. He retrieved his mount and headed out fast on foot. Apparently his hunters were far away, because he reached the edge of the forest without hearing anyone coming after him. Out in the meadow stood four horses, tethered to a shrubby bush and carrying saddles marked with the silver dragon of Aberwyn. One of them suddenly stamped, another tossed its head in irritation, then all four of them were nickering, stamping, throwing up their heads in panic. As Rodri mounted, he saw the knots that held their reins slip loose, untied by invisible fingers. The horses pranced, whinnied, and all at once they bolted, racing north in blind panic. Rodri laughed aloud and called out a last thanks as he turned his horse and galloped south, back to the main road. Nevin was riding alone at the rear of the warband when two wild folk came back, popping into manifestation on the horse's head and on his saddle peak. The obese yellow gnome was particularly pleased with himself, grinning from ear to ear and rubbing his fat little stomach. Nevin slowed his horse and dropped even farther back, out of earshot of the men.
"Did you do what I told you to?"
The yellow gnome nodded a yes and stretched its mouth in a soundless peal of laughter.
"And Rodri's safe."
This time the blue sprite nodded vigorously. She shaded her eyes with one hand and did a pantomime of someone peering and searching, while her face registered sheer frustration.
"And you got the horses?"
They both nodded.
"Splendid, splendid. You have my thanks, and you come tell me if Rodri's in danger again."
They disappeared in a swirl of breeze. As Nevin rode back up to join the others, he allowed himself a smile for the thought of Rhys's men, walking the whole 15 miles back to Aberwyn in soft riding boots.
It's a good thing I decided to scry Rodri out, he thought to himself. Curse Rhys and his murdering bastards all.
The warband must have reached your cousin's den by now, Danyan remarked.
Just so, Levian said. It was sensible of